Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
I feel that there's a sense of normality occurring when, after last week's bizarre scenario where William Sitwell's column was actually on the left-hand side of the Telegraph magazine, it's now actually gone back to the right-hand side, which makes perfect sense, really. And at least we don't have to scan a QR code. Sarah Hadley, welcome. William Sitwell, welcome to your slot, of course. That's the key thing. This is the traditional William Sitwell feature. And technology works splendidly. And we also have Ben Lewis with us. How are you, Ben?
Good, thank you, Alex. Very good, thank you.
Marvellous. Okay. William, your first review, as I say, went into the Telegraph last weekend, of course. That was the first time you'd had a family outing to a standard London restaurant with, of course, no menus, but cars. QR codes, I should say.
Say cars?
Yeah.
He's too busy thinking about me, I think.
This is true.
No, and I mean, I am a great lover of new technology, but I do find it irritating when you have to sit in a restaurant, you have to actually, you know, get out your phone that really you should be leaving in order to be able to access the menu. But I suppose it's hygienic. Yeah, that was the only one small minor downside of going to Sam's Bradbury in Hammersmith.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam's Riverside, a full 4.5-star rating. And the classic line, the confluence of location, sun, river, wine, kids and lobster made me glad to be alive.
Yes, and I had that wonderful feeling I always have when I have, you know, I always sort of thank God that I'm not an alcoholic yet. It's that feeling, you know, that first glass when you really relish the alcohol seeping into you and you get that feeling of goodwill. And it's always important to remember how good that feels, because the terrible thing about being an alcoholic is you can never drink, which is always sort of ironic, isn't it? But you remember Geoffrey Bernard once said that he remembers the wonderful feeling about being half drunk and spent the rest of his life trying to get there. But of course, you know,
Geoffrey Bernard was unwell. And I think probably Ben's far too young to remember that particular classic play about a journalist who, as I say, was known for his fondness for the occasional tipple. I suspect, Sarah, you might probably just recall that play. Maybe not. I don't know.
It was a very much so. No, it was a wonderful play. Didn't Peter O'Toole did?
Yeah, I saw Peter O'Toole playing, but Geoffrey Bernard. And Geoffrey Bernard, who for Ben and the other children listening, he was a Soho habitué, and he had a column in The Spectator called Low Life, where he would basically write about his life in Soho and his life at the Coach and Horses with the world's rudest landlord, Norman. And there were moments in the column, there were weeks where he wasn't able to write, either because he'd drunk so much he had to have a leg chopped off, or he was just properly unwell, where it just said Geoffrey Bernard is unwell. And then Keith Waterhouse, the great columnist and also playwright, collaborated with Geoffrey Bernard and staged this play called Geoffrey Bernard is Unwell. And I think Tom Conti played Geoffrey Bernard in a latter production, but I think nothing could ever beat Peter O'Toole. And I remember going to see it and Geoffrey Bernard was in the bar in the interval. It's quite unusual.
It's a magical moment. Ben, share with us what you've been getting up to, because I know you've been desperately keen to speak to William the last few weeks. You haven't been able to join us on our Zoom calls because you've been doing busy things in the automotive industry.
So all work, all picking up again now. But funny enough, when William was saying about Soho, it was Coach and Horses. I've spent many an evening in the Coach and Horses in Soho, working Soho Square, so it's only down the road. It's been very busy. We've got quite a lot of events going on at the minute. We've had the first automotive event at the Household Artillery Company in London. That was 2 weeks ago now. And we've got one starting again tomorrow at Hampton Court Palace. So that's going on now till Sunday. So it's all picking up, both Concours events. So some of the rarest cars from around the world will all be in one place. And it should be a lovely time. Hopefully, weather, you know, the weather being good, that's what we're hoping for. But it's been very busy, and a couple of car launches in between as well. So I can't complain. It keeps me in work. So, you know, I'm doing all right compared to other industries, I think, much better than expected. But William, may I just ask you a quick question with, not just with Track and Trace, but with the Eat Out Help Out as well. How do you feel about restaurants using Eat Out Help Out now going onwards? Do you think it should be a scheme that should be continued, or do you think it's something that's down to prerogative?
First of all...
I don't think it's a phone. He's just got something immediately to hand with a whole full a dossier.
Look, I've been sent by Imperial College an Ipsos Mori testing kit, so I can check if I have it.
Oh.
Isn't that exciting? I'm one of the lucky ones. There's no question that Eat Out to Help Out has been an extraordinary success, and it's always been refreshing to hear restaurateurs lavish praise on the government, because they certainly weren't making those noises at the beginning of lockdown. And Rishi Sunak, or Rishi's Dishes, as they call them, there have been 64 million of them sold, 85,000 restaurateurs have taken part. And I think that a lot of restaurateurs who were literally staring into the abyss have been pulled back and assisted by this incredible scheme. And I've spoken to publicans, and I've heard reports of establishments that say they haven't been this busy in 30 years. So it's been a huge, great, injection of energy and positivity into the hospitality industry. Obviously, the government has cowed everyone into staying at home. So Rishi, the Pied Piper of good food, has dragged or tempted people out of their houses. The question is, of course, what happens next? Now, I personally don't think that the scheme should be continued, because someone's got to pay for it. And if it's corporation tax being raised, that means attacking the very businesses that have been assisted, as well as every other business in the country, and mine included. So I think it's up to restaurateurs now to understand and learn from these discounts. And a lot of them are doing it. In fact, quite a lot of businesses were extending the help out to Eat Out over the weekend anyway. Funny enough, I'll put my hand up. I read a piece in the Telegraph attacking this scheme when it was launched, because I thought that the time people needed to be helped to Eat Out was Thursday to Saturday, not Monday to Wednesday. But of course, lockdown has rendered us all confused. We don't know what day it is. Tuesday is the new Saturday. Wednesday is the new Friday night. We don't know what day of the week it is. But so I think that obviously lots of restaurants are going to suffer. Unless people go back to work, places will shut down. There were some interesting discussions in the press last week about how for every person who works at home, that's a cup of coffee, a sandwich, as well as a newspaper that's not being purchased. So every job at home is a P45 for someone in the city centres, and restaurants won't survive without people going to work. So it's very, very concerning. But yeah, it's the entrepreneurial spirit of restaurateurs that will have to come to the fore now. It's yet enough. I mean, who would open a restaurant? You've got to be a nutter, haven't you? Anyway, you have to be so multi-talented. You've got to be a designer, a manager of people. You've got to have a philosophy. You've got to be able to deal with your suppliers. And you've got to be able to cook. So
actually, if it's your choice between going into the acting profession or actually going into the restaurant business, you'd probably say it's more sensible to go into the acting.
Most people in the acting profession do both, don't they? by necessity.
Sarah, have you been eating out either in Cornwall or indeed in Wimbledon recently?
Yes, I've been doing a lot of eating out. Yeah. For me, it's obviously, I think William will agree, it's not just the meal, it's the whole ambiance and experience of going out, getting yourself done up, which we've all missed doing, putting the lipstick, putting your heels on.
I don't think William does lipstick or high heels, personally, but,
We don't know. But I do think I foresee a very, very difficult year, and then from the ashes, the phoenix will rise again. But what I think is so sad is my favourite restaurant of all time, San Lorenzo's in Wimbledon, was having a few problems anyway, and I'm sorry to plug it, but it's the most lovely place, lovely people, individual attention. I'd planned my 60th there. And they were having a few problems before this, and obviously that's gone. As I think I said to William, I love all the little Italian restaurants in Soho and that kind of thing. You don't always want to go to the big chains of things. I mean, in Cornwall, take my hat off to the people in Foy, they're really risking everything. And they're all individual restaurants on their own with no chain. And people are coming here to just do that, to go out to eat. I mean, it's better than Padstow at the moment. But I think the problem is, the grimness is about to hit us. It's now the time to pay back on everything. Schools, restaurants, the rest. We can't avoid it. It's like saying, you know, when are you going to get this homework done? And this is what we've got hard reality to face, to pay back, to carry on coping without knowing where we're going with the virus. And it's got to start now.
Personally, sir, I don't think we're going to get anything to worry about because we put all the responsibility on Ben. I mean, he's young enough to actually cope with all this. Ben, any concerns about the whole process of working in public relations as you do?
Well, look, unfortunately, there are no magic money trees, even if Jeremy Corbyn says there is one. But unfortunately, money has to be paid back one way or another. And as William was saying, I completely agree with him. That you can't just punish corporations because they're the very people that keep people in jobs. And you can't, you know, say tax millionaires more, tax rich people more, because what's going to stop them leaving the country, you know? And who'd you tax then? You end up in a worse position. I mean, I heard arguments the other day, listening to the radio, that it may well be easier to reduce VAT and tax on things to allow people to spend more, and that way you earn more back. But then, I was listening, talking about Eat Out, Help Out again. I was listening to an interesting piece where someone was saying that obviously they have an independent restaurant. It's harder for them to operate Eat Out, Help Out after the scheme is finished, because they're not getting, better margins from suppliers. They're not getting things in bulk as much. Mm-hmm. So only the big restaurant chains are able to really operate it and earn money back from it still. So I'm keen to hear William's thoughts on those, because will if this scheme does operate after by choice, will it be independent restaurants and pubs and that sort of thing that suffer most rather than chains and big operators that are able to have those profit margins and able to operate with suppliers to get a good deal on things in bulk?
Well, it's a very good question, because of course the, you know, chefs like to have the freedom to do what they want to do, which is why they like to run small independent restaurants. But it's the chains that have the bank balances, you know, in their favor, although not all of them, because some of them have gone bust anyway. So I think that a lot of these smaller independents are going to have to take a few lessons out of the supermarket's rule book, which is to lean on your suppliers. When Waitrose, for example, does a 25% off wine event, don't think that it's just them that's shouldering the cost of that. They get their suppliers to help them support that. In other words, they say, look, you need to sell us your wine cheaper so that we can promote it. So I think that those tactics restaurateurs will need to use, speaking to their suppliers, say, look, I'm sorry, if you need to take a few pounds off your lamb or your beef or your vegetables or your bread or your butter so that we can offer the punters a better deal, because without us, you won't have a client. And I think similarly, landlords are going to have to offer good deals or do profit shares rather than just stinging restaurants with huge rates. Because if the businesses go bust, the landlords will have voids. So there's going to be a huge resettling of different parts of the economy. But what is certainly true is that if you don't have money in your pocket, you won't eat out anyway. So I think, yeah, I agree
perhaps
with you.
We should go back to foraging, William. That's a possibility. Well, you know.
Listen, as I look out of the window now, the blackberries are on every hedgerow and they're coming into fruit. So we can't just live on them, can we?
Well, I suppose technically we're good, but maybe not. A year ago, Ben, of course, you were graduating. How does it feel having had this interesting time as one of our graduates from the University of Lincoln's programme?
Oh, it's interesting, isn't it? Obviously, a lot has changed in a year. And I feel like half a year has just gone in a blur. And you don't really know what's happened. You sort of drunk haze you've woken up in, thinking, you know, what the hell's happened there? It's all very strange. And, I think it's going to be interesting. Obviously, it's interesting for the outgoing people, the fact that that they're not going to be able to graduate till next Easter. But yeah, it's interesting, really, and I think it's going to change the way working goes from here on in. I mean, look, we're looking at potentially selling the office in Soho, but the lease doesn't run out for another year and a half, so there's no need for us to at the moment. But I worked in the office on Tuesday. I went in, and interestingly, I mean, it's absolutely dead. Soho Square, even a lot of companies have moved out. But then also around that area, you just don't feel the need to be there as much. You know, the markets aren't up. The pubs are fairly empty. It's not hard to get a seat anywhere. And then with working from home anyway, there is that flexibility that some people love, especially if you've got kids and things as well. But, I think the office dynamic will change going forward, whether that be people doing, two or three days a week working in and then the rest of the week working at home. I don't know. But I think that will all depend on where you're working and who for. I think there'll be many changes going forward with the not just the offices, but generally speaking, around.
Times may well change, Ben, but the one guarantee at least we've got is that Williams House Wines will remain a perfect place to actually sort out various other things. William, that is your cue. Share with us how people access the joys of Williams House Wines.
Oh, well, how kind of you. WilliamsHouseWines.com. I mean, how difficult is that? Place your orders now.
Where are they made?
Where are my wines produced? All around the world. So I source wines from, literally, we've got some Chilean rosé on there. I've got a fantastic French Sauvignon Blanc made by Guy Alois. It's a wonderful winemaker. I've got some very good French fizz, just made 25 miles outside of Champagne, but it's Maître Champenoise. Tastes like champagne, is as good as, but it's much cheaper because it's not officially champagne. Charles de Fer. I've got all sorts of things, actually. So, it's a little wine business. It's the world's smallest wine store. But I shan't bore everyone with it because we talked about it last week.
Exactly. And there's a podcast available where you can work through that. Any progress in terms of sourcing Rippon's wines? I mean, we have to ask, obviously.
Yes. I'm booked to go off to New Zealand next week directly to the Rippon Valley to see Angela's vineyard. And I'll be bringing back some with me and it'll be on my shelves by the end of the week.
Splendid. And as I say, you're the first midweek driver who's actually had that biohazard self-testing test, which you've also demonstrated there, which is fantastic. Sarah, any final closing thoughts for either William or Ben?
No, just wishing us all a happy, successful September and going forward with joy, really. Joy. That's all I can do. Go forward with joy. I don't know who joy is. Joy. I can't actually see you. I've lost you. I know it's radio, but I can't see you. But just wishing everybody a good, prosperous, positive September.
Joy is a restaurant in London at Portobello Docks run by Stevie Pearl, if you're wondering what joy is. Where joy is and where you can access joy.
Oh, we can all go to see joy there then, can't we?
It's all joy until the bill comes.
it's just sensational the way things go. I'd originally thought we'd be talking about sleep and various other things with Stephanie Romashevsky from the sleep system. She's obviously slept in. So two final questions. Ben, would you like to put them to both William and Sarah? Off you go, Sam.
William and Sarah, have you both had a reasonably interesting 10 up like Skype Zoom call today?
Zoomer, not Skype. Don't mention the S word.
Yes, I've had a lovely Zoomer. I think William has too.
You're glorious.
Wonderful. And will you be both join us again in the not too distant future, perhaps even next week?
Yes, of course.
It's not really up to me. These things just happen, don't they, Alex?
Well, I don't know, William, if you're in New Zealand next week, we'd have to sort of schedule all the time zones around. So
I'll cancel the trip immediately.
No, actually, at this time in New Zealand, I think it's just around about 8 or so in the evening. So,
on that basis. Easily, William. No.
Can I just, this is a thing called Talking Game, right? Which I've just written the foreword for. It's an entire, it's a little booklet of recipes for game. And I've written the intro, which you can't see on Zoom because it's back to front, which it says no. Shooting people.
Yeah, we can see exactly shooting people, and there's a wonderful photograph of yourself.
No, it's really, I just want to reassure people that it's shooting people, not shooting people, if you see what I mean.
I'm pleased you mentioned that, William, because after the vegan affair, we don't want to go down that line at all in any way, shape or form, because step away from that.
I'm celebrating the characters you find around a shoot.
Exactly.
I'm not advocating shooting people. I just want to put that on record.
Okay. William, we're grateful you did, and I've certainly missed the country shows and the game fairs that are actually out from that point of view. Sarah Huntley, Ben Lewis, William Sitwell, many thanks indeed. Stay safe, keep on keeping on, and speak soon.
Speak soon.
Bye. The importance of generational education can never be underestimated, and as we are stewards of the planet Earth, it's very important that our children are taught how to deal with the environment and how to cope with the environment, etc. 9 in 10 parents have actually said kids have a good understanding of the environment, but 41% of those have actually learnt their knowledge from TV. Now, to talk about this, we're delighted to welcome the co-founder of the Noah's Ark Foundation, the wonderful Hein Prinsloo Kersen. How are you, Hein?
Hi, Alex. I'm great. Thanks. Yourself?
Excellent. Now, I mean, this is something which in many ways it's a no-brainer, isn't it, really, that one of the byproducts in a sense of this pandemic thing is with more and more of us hopefully working from home and getting used to that, and despite protestations that we need to be back to the office, etc., this is really having an impact in terms of our environment, in terms of the lack of carbon footprint. So, I mean, that's good from that basis alone, isn't it?
Oh, yes, definitely, Alex. You know, I've seen during this lockdown and this COVID crisis, a lot of people in a lot of corporate organizations are working from home, and they are actually going to convert doing that on a permanent basis. And I feel this is brilliant because, like you said, it lowers our carbon footprint. You spend more time with your kids. You spend more time educating them. The television rate of our survey that we conducted, although a good rate, I feel can still improve. And instead, you know, also get personally involved in educating your children about animals and our carbon footprint and our environment.
Now, biblical scholars will clearly be aware of the legend of Noah and his ark and so on. Talk to us about this 21st century ark and this domed city that you're building to protect the world's wildlife and ecology.
Yeah. Yes, Alex. You know, it is a biblical thing. Noah's Ark is in every religion throughout time, throughout history. And it is perfectly fitted and suited for what we are trying to do. We are in need to preserve our animals of today and our climate. And the way to do that is to essentially build another ark. But instead of it being a floating ark, it is a land ark, with replicated domes, geodomes, so that we can have animals from around the world. We do realize our climate in South Africa is not the same as in the UK or anywhere else in the world. So we have to build geodomes to replicate those climates. And these are very intricate technologically advanced systems. And I feel it's important to educate our children on that. You know, children are very prone to TV and new smartphones and tablets, and they love technology. So this is actually a very good thing because we have a medium now to teach our children, give them all the technically advanced information about Noah's Ark, and also in the same way save our animals and our climate.
And actually, in many ways, you can draw the parallel between the Earth itself as a bit of an ark, because without this particular planet, the human race would be in a pretty pickle indeed, shall we say. So, you know, again, from the micro to the macro, we need to be aware that looking after our planet can only bear dividends for the future.
Exactly, Alex. And the children of today is our future of tomorrow. They will shape, form, mold and build our future. For not only for us as human species, but also for our animals and our planet. So, like you said, our planet essentially is Noah's Ark.
I'm particularly fascinated by the notion that children are having such a good knowledge of environmental affairs that they're regularly passing on eco-advice to their parents, using less energy, leaving food out for animals, eating less meat, and so on. I mean, again, without wanting to actually encourage children to start badgering and hectoring their elders and so on, I mean, this can only be a positive side of things, surely.
It is positive, Alex. I actually wish that more children would do that. Currently, 69% of parents are educated by their children on living healthier and better and looking after the environment. I would like that figure to grow to 80 or 90%. Children, they catch on very quickly and they learn very quickly because of they're such a young age. And they find animals interesting. They find the environment interesting because they want to explore and they want to learn. And as they learn, they educate the parents. I absolutely love that. And I think more parents can listen to their kids when they say, "Daddy, please don't eat that meat. Think twice before you switch on and leave on a light." You know, I love that. And it's absolutely brilliant. Children love teaching as well. They love teaching their parents.
Yeah, having said that, though, Hein, it's not all necessarily good news, because in the classic case of not practicing what one is preaching, I see that a third of children still like to take really long showers, leave lights on, and indeed one in four ask for lifts for short trips near home. So maybe there still needs to be a broader aspect to these issues as well.
Oh, yes. Alex, when you're young, it's easy to complain to your parents about what they do wrong. but you don't think what you do and leave your phone on and leave your phone on the charger and leave your room light on. So in practical, it's not as easy. But the main point is that the thought is there and the realization is there that we need to live better.
And perhaps we also need to start work on getting a suitable replacement for the precious metals that are used in new technology like mobile phones, etc., because certainly the concern about the way that the Earth is being ransacked for those particular aspects is very problematic. So it's fair to say that even though we have the technology, as you mentioned, we still need to be aware that there are possible costs to that technology and we need to obviously look for alternatives.
Oh, yes, definitely. I'm not sure, but I think there are technology in development to make smartphones better and actually TVs as well, to make it from a better carbon footprint material. So that's being in development in Dubai, if I'm not mistaken. But we would obviously like to see it sooner rather than later.
Exactly. Now, we've spoken about the Noah's Ark Foundation. We've talked about, obviously, the educational aspect with respect to that and so on. How can people find out further details, Hein, about the Noah's Ark Foundation? Because I know a general quick search will bring up an awful lot of Noah's Ark Foundation material that's actually there. So we want to get exactly the right website for this.
Yes, no, absolutely right, Alex. It's difficult with Noah's Ark being a biblical thing. When you Google and you search, you would get up a load of pictures of Noah's Ark. But our website is noahsark.life, which is fitting because we want to preserve and save all life species on the planet. So it's noahsark.life. People can go on there. Your listeners can get involved, personally engage with us, give us suggestions, comments, support us by donating on the website. There's a gift shop where you can support us by buying clothing material. So there's a lot of ways for your listeners to get involved, and it's all on the platform, on the website, noahsark.life.
And that presumably is noahsark.life, just so we've got that absolutely spot on.
Yeah, that is absolutely right.
Brilliant. Hein, it's been wonderful sharing some thoughts with yourself. Where do you see the actual foundation going over the next few years? I mean, would you see that we'd have a series of these kind of geodesic domes and things established around the globe to actually sort of enhance areas? Or are we looking for literally, as say, that global reach for the whole world, as we said, becoming one large Noah's Ark?
Oh, yes, that would eventually be the goal, Alex. We're developing Noah's Ark, the main hub in South Africa, but we do want lifeboats as such in all the major territories around the world to help deal with local issues with regards to plants, animal species and climate change. So there will be lifeboats around the world with the main Noah's Ark in South Africa. And we want the whole world to be involved in saving our own home.
And again, as we said at the start of the piece, surely that is definitely a no-brainer. We need to progress with respect to that. Hein Prinsloo-Curzon, co-founder of the Noah's Ark Foundation. Huge thanks. Stay safe and keep building the ark.
Thanks, Alex. Great speaking to you. Thank you for the time.
About a year ago, we were delighted to actually feature the group marketing director for One For All Gift Cards, Aoife Davey, to talk about the importance of saying thank you. And thank you has become even more important now in terms of the attitude of gratitude and so on. So who better to actually talk about the ways in which we can best say thank you in the midst of a pandemic and more than, of course, the wonderful group marketing director for One For All Gift Cards. That's Aoife Davey. How are you, Aoife?
I'm super, Alex. How are you?
Very well indeed. And of course, ace psychologist, author of The Leader's Guide to Mindfulness, The Leader's Guide to Resilience. She is our leader, psychologist extraordinaire, the fantastically wonderful Audrey Tang. How are you, Audrey?
Thank you very much, Alex. I'm excited now. No, thank you. I'm very well. How are you?
Very good indeed, thank you. And we're already thanking each other. We're already feeling good just because of thanking each other, which is great. So, Audrey, if we can come to you first, that positive buzz that you actually get by saying thank you, sometimes we forget it, but we're told from a very early age the importance of please and thank you, and actually having that attitude of gratitude can bear so many good dividends.
Absolutely. But of course, the thank you is so much more than good manners. It's lovely to say please and thank you. It's something that we learn. But thank you is a real acknowledgement. It is an expression that somebody has done something that has touched your life and you want to appreciate that out loud. Appreciation and gratitude can be quite internal sometimes. And especially now in a world that's very swipe left, swipe right, very fast moving, we don't have time to think. It's so important to make that connection. And thank you is a wonderful way of doing that.
Aoife, I mean, one might say that One For All Gift Cards is a wonderful traditional, almost 20th century version of actually saying thank you from that point of view. There are lots of ways forward. But you know, talk to us about how One For All is also kind of providing a concrete way of showing appreciation for individuals.
Yeah, in terms of, I suppose, showing appreciation in these current times, we do have to get a bit more creative. You know, we can't, no longer at the moment, can we give the big thank you hugs. So what we have seen is definitely a move towards people giving thank you gift cards. But also what we've seen is a trend to more personalization. So people have been choosing the more personalized gift card designs, like just for you, just because, treat yourself, and because at the end of the day they know that someone is going to do exactly that with a digital gift card, which is what you, the sentiment you do want to give when you're giving a thank you. You want them to treat themselves. But also we've seen, because we have a digital gift card now that you can send on your phone or by email, you can upload images. So we've seen people doing that a huge amount, but also there's been lovely things, particularly during lockdown, where people took photos of drawings kids did and they uploaded them. So really just really adding to that personalization piece. So I suppose that's what we've seen. We've seen, because people are really trying to give that bit more, they're personalizing in any way they can to give that extra power to their thank you.
Audrey, the use of technology to actually say thank you. I mean, we've talked about obviously the speed and the rapidity of the technology we're using today, for instance. But, and I suppose you could argue that you could still give hugs as long as both parties were wearing full hazmat suits. But, you know, that's going to be a bit hectic to work through. I mean, is that psychologically a way in which people will respond well to that? Or do we still at some part of us actually prefer that physicality of a thank you?
I think that really depends on the type of person, because there's a lot of people who are missing giving hugs at the moment, but actually there's a few who are thinking, oh, I'm actually quite grateful I don't have to do it because they're not a hugger. So I think what the gift card does in particular is it not only allows you to tell somebody that you're thinking of them and why, and that's one of the most important, and some of us find it a lot easier to write that down than we do speaking it, and so that's the opportunity, but also with a gift card, we can't always know everyone so well that we know exactly what to give them, but by giving them a gift card, they can choose something themselves. However, the positive feeling carries on from there, because whenever you look at that gift card or the gift you purchase, you will think of that person. So I think it actually does have a lot of merit, especially in a world where we can't see each other so often.
Aoife, I was really impressed by seeing in the survey that retail workers are becoming appreciated more. And indeed, the 29% of folk have actually said they're more thankful for what other people do for them. So is that a positive that's come out of the pandemic that we've been faced with globally, Aoife?
Yeah, absolutely. It's just that, I suppose, particularly during this pandemic, people have been vocal about what gestures have meant to them. So we know definitely with the NHS, the nurses, doctors are very vocal about how amazing it made them feel. And so people are just understanding the impact of these gestures and saying thank you. And that's something that seems to, that is definitely globally seen.
37% thankful for nurses, 47% for nurses, 37% for doctors, 27% for care workers. I'd like to see more thanks for psychologists, personally, Aoife.
That's no problem. We can do something about that.
Well, quite right. I mean, Audrey, in terms of that whole sort of process, what are your sort of most positive aspects of being grateful over the last few months? What have been any that sort of emerged where you've sort of thought, you know, I'm really grateful for technology to enable us to do this, for instance?
I think, well, certainly technology, because it's helped us get on with work. But I think one of the problems is we've become human doings instead of human beings. And this is a work-related doing thing. Whereas I think I've been a lot more grateful for having a garden and being able to stop and sit outside for a while. I've been grateful for my close friends. And I like working with my clients on a gratitude exercise. I ask them to keep a gratitude journal or to do a simple gratitude stretch where they literally stretch their arms and think of something that they're grateful for, their legs, someone they're grateful for. And this actually helps us program the brain to think more positively, which is a really wonderful thing. Not only does it do that, but you'll notice patterns every time you are grateful for someone or something. You'll notice the same things and same people pop up time and time again. And we begin to realize those are our real values. And that's so important because I think the pandemic has given us an opportunity to take a step back and really recognize what is important for us. And therefore, when we go back into the world again, we can go back with our new assessed priorities and new values.
Yeah, absolutely. And personally, I'm always grateful for the Leader's Guide to Resilience, which I think is forthcoming, which is always nice. A little shameless plug from that point of view.
Aoife, thank you.
back to yourself in terms of where can people go to find out further details about the findings of this survey or indeed One for All gift cards?
Yep, they can find out all the interesting findings from this survey and about One for All gift cards on oneforall.com.
And I can actually attest to the success of obviously gratitude journals because I've actually applied that technique with several of my students to great success. So draudreyt.com, obviously a great sort of source as well from that point of view. Two final questions for your good selves. First of all, Aoife, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic or Zoom link with us today?
Have I had an interesting...
Yes, it's our customer satisfaction, really. You can have a smiley face, 5 stars, whatever. Has it been okay for yourself?
Perfect. It's been, yeah, absolutely perfect. I cannot believe I can do this from the comfort of my own home.
Well, exactly. I mean, not that we're knocking the fine technologists that work behind us, but it can be quite fun. And Audrey, what about yourself? Has it been good for you?
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you. It's been really lovely to have this technology, to be able to meet so many new people as well.
Exactly. Well, we'd like to thank you both, obviously, and hopefully welcome you back in the not-too-distant future. Audrey Tang, ACE psychologist, and Aoife Davey, Group Marketing Director for One for All Gift Cards. Thank you both.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. I'm not ashamed to say it always will stay this way. My hat is off. Won't you stand up and take a bow? And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, well, you would see the biggest gift would be for me. And the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. For being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. If it's a car you lack, I'd surely buy you a Cadillac. Whatever you need, anytime the day and night. I'm not ashamed to say. it will stay this way. My hat is off, won't you stand up and take a bow? And when they both get older, with walking canes and hair gray, have no fear, even though it's hard to hear, I will stand real close and say thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being
for being a...